Hello, everyone, and welcome to our panel for our FOSDEM Legal and Policy Dev Room on compliance. This has become somewhat of a staple for our Dev Room. We're doing it, of course, remote this year because of the pandemic, but we have a couple of great panelists that are going to dig in today to discuss the issues of doing GPL compliance with a focus on what happens for the customers, the users, the individuals who get devices. How do we assure that they have the source code they're supposed to get under copyleft licenses so that it works? And we're going to talk about it from a number of different perspectives from folks all over the industry. I have joining us today, first of all, John Sullivan, the executive director of the Free Software Foundation. We have Davide Ricci, the director of Open Source Technology Center at Huawei. We have Eilish Nilonigan, also known as Pidge, who is the CEO and CTO of Togen Labs and the chief architect of Network Grade Linux. And coming to us from the legal side, we have Miriam Bellhausen, who's a lawyer at Bird & Bird and focuses on copyright law. So to get started, I would like to start with asking John a question, because John, you work for and are the principal person at the organization that started the whole idea that software freedom was an important issue way back in 1985, and we're really the first to talk about why it's important. So can you tell us a little bit about why the issues of compliance with copyleft licenses fit so directly and importantly with the issues of the compliance requirements, the details in those licenses that companies and redistributors have to follow?
Sure. And thanks for having me on the panel today. I'm looking forward to the rest of this discussion. I think it's a very special thing about free software that it is designed to have both fully commercial and non-commercial purposes. And so, at the FSF, view this as a social movement, for sure, with an ethical foundation and an ethical mission. But these chances to talk together with the people that are using the software commercially and have experience doing that and hearing their experiences is really important part of that. So the primary copyleft license, I think, that we have in mind is the GNU General Public License. And that has a very simple requirement in its face that you have to share when you distribute a program to another person. You have to share the source code, which is what you as a programmer, or what the programmers that you hire actually use to modify the program and create the program, the human readable code. And the reason that that's a requirement is because a binary program, it's not particularly useful other than for purposes of being able to run it or hand it off to somebody else. So they could run it too. If you wanted to understand anything much about how the program works, or you want to be able to make changes to it, you have to have the source code for that. That's the whole reason for free software, for its existence, is so that users are in control of the devices that they have, the software-powered devices that they have, rather than those devices being in control of them. And if you can't inspect the program that's running on your laptop or your phone or in your car, then you can't actually know what it's doing other than trusting the company that gave you that software, trusting that they're telling the truth. I've seen plenty of examples, unfortunately, where that doesn't pan out. And then second of all, even once you understand it, if you want to be able to, make a change to it, you also need the source code for that. And I think the closing key thing here is just that these rights aren't just for programmers. Anybody, if they have the source code, can go to a programmer and ask them to make a change for them, just like you can get your car repaired at a mechanic or have someone else fix the HVAC system in your house. But you can't do that unless you have the rights to the source code and the freedom to take it to other people and ask them to do things.
And Pidge, that's why I want to come to you here, because one of the focuses of your work is, as I understand it, is to help people and help those who build these devices, which are these days a lot more complicated than they were when these licenses first came out, to actually make that software build and work correctly and create these compliant source releases that are required under these licenses. Can you talk a little bit about what you're seeing in your work in trying to help your clients get that source code right, and what the challenges are that they face with regard to the interaction between the details of that software and its source code and their compliance requirements.
Right. So a little background here. When people do a lot of software compliance work, they're doing it around one chunk of software. I'm doing it entire firmware blobs. So entire Linux stacks. And it's complicated because it's not, I need to know what software is on it and what the licenses are. You also end up needing to know how it's built and how it's all tied together. So with a lot of my clients, it's initially, why do we need this? And then, you know, can't we just throw out the metadata and just have it that way and not actually provide the source code? They can get the source code from upstream, that conversation. So there's a period of buy-in initially, and then the complicated work happens, which is going through each and every bit, figuring out, you know, which source package is using, you know, because one bit of source code or one package may have multiple things that come out of it with various different licenses. So for example, I use this all the time, Puzzle. Puzzle may have Puzzle, Puzzle Dev, Puzzle Docs, and they're all going to have very different licenses. So it's understanding everything from nuts and bolts all the way from initial build system all the way to how everything's built to how everything's deployed. So there's a lot of teaching developers things that thou shalt not do, like static compilations of closed source software against GPL code, which we have to have that conversation. And software developers are clever and they go, well, what if we do a shim layer in here? No. Stop trying to get around that. So there's a lot of education on the corporate side that I end up having to do to teach developers how to do this correctly, and how to do compliance activities afterwards. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. And I want to go to Davide now, because what you're doing is you're looking from inside your company and trying to build up and answer these questions so that your employees know how to do this correctly, how to incorporate free and open source software into your products. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you design that strategy from inside a company to make sure that you're getting that final source release at the end that, as Pitch says, is looking at the entire firmware blob and making sure you have what's required for the entire firmware, not just one part.
So first of all, I've done this a couple of times. I've done it at Wind River, and I've learned at the Intel OTC school up in Portland. And then I'm not doing this a Huawei. So first thing that you have to do is just do it first. Even before you start building code, you know that you're going to be using open source software when you build an operating system. So first thing that you have to think is, how do I ensure the compliance, right? And how do I do it incrementally? So over time, I mean, initially it was a lot of, you know, guess and let's figure it out, you know, work. Right now we have good standards that are coming out of, for instance, Linux Foundation with the Open Chain standard, which is really industry oriented. Free Software Foundation is helping us a lot, especially in Europe, helping Huawei to actually do it right. But you know, it's about, as I said, if you want to go with Open Chain, it's about creating a policy, funding the policy. So essentially you got to make sure that it's funded. There's people to actually follow the policy, train individuals, so that developers, managers, they know what the process are, is what their roles is, so that at the end of the day, everybody knows the do's and the don'ts. And then when you start building that bill of material that tells you, hey, in this device, there's this software, these are the licenses, this is the manifest, these are the author, this is the license that we think the software has. Oh, and by the way, hey, IP analyst, can you go look? Because some licenses were not clear. At the end of the chain, you have the best possible accuracy when it comes to the bill of material. There's no 100% accuracy, and business is about, you know, risk and gain. But as a general manager, I don't want to go to market with a big unknown. So at the end of the day, it is the most accurate bill of material that gets me through. And if there's a red flag that is flagged by, you know, for me by the team, then, you know, you take a risk-based decision. But that's pretty much the process you follow.
Yeah. And so you identified risk, and that brings me to want to ask Miriam about that question of risk. Because ultimately, the reason, if there were no requirements in any of the open source and free software licenses that we have, particularly the copyleft ones, no one would worry about any of these questions that Davide is talking about. So Miriam, what do you see? We're so many years now into adoption of open source and free software in companies. When you talk to your clients, what is their legal concern? What is their fear? And on the other side of it, are they able to see it, convert that legal risk into let's make things better for our customers? Like where do you see that divide happening in the clients that you're talking to?
Yeah, happy to.